This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to Cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here.
Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it is time for Q&A with Layla, and now it's officially summer, so how you doing, Layla?
Welcome. Okay.
Welcome to the summer kickoff edition of Q&A with Layla.
I'm always happy when it's summer.
Yep. Are you going to get some quality time on the beach?
Yes. That's okay. The plan.
That's already planned. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So you go out to Long Island, right?
I'll go out to Long Island.
You're on the North Shore, I'm on the South Shore.
Right, so we can right.
All right.
I'll wave to you from across Peconic Bay.
Well, sometimes I get up there. I have to take a bike ride or something like that. You know, I can wave to you as I hurtle by at breakneck speed on my racing bike.
It was you I drove by.
That's right.
That time in Greenport.
As long as it's, I don't run you over. The only times you seem to get run over are here, like right in front of the Hoffman Center in Manhattan. That's when you look the wrong way across the street, and some of the bike
That's
comes
right.
from the other direction.
That happened to me a couple of years ago. It was,
right.
Oh my goodness!
Got mowed
I don't
down.
Know. I got mowed down.
Mowed down. And then the guy, of course, didn't look back.
Oh no! He stopped. Yeah. He didn't say anything.
Right.
But I said to him, haltingly, "You're going the wrong way." You're going the wrong way.
You politely
way.
Pointed out to
yeah.
me. That I
then,
don't think I would have.
And then I dismissed him because I wasn't going to.
I think my dialogue with him would have been a little more X-rated than that.
I was too stunned from the fall.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay, so what's in the news this week? Any particular...
news this week? Gee, nothing that screams out at me.
Nothing screams out at you?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I posted an article, interesting article, that is a review of the digestive tract in aging.
Mm.
And the hallmark of the digestive tract in aging is inflammation. Inflammation is what happens as a almost inevitable process of aging. But I wonder if that's inevitable. I wonder if it's just because as we age, we expose ourselves to more bad foods, chemicalized residues in foods, and ultimately... Our GI tracts become more inflamed. That may break the gap junctions and cause leaky gut syndrome.
Sure.
And that may lead to body-wide inflammation, too.
Absolutely. And older people will be on more medication, or maybe even
right.
more use of NSAIDs, and that'll
absolutely.
Lead to all of
that. That's a factor, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is the all these anti-inflammatories that we use
and
actually...
And they're being given Ensure.
Right.
I had to throw that in there.
Right.
And they're drinking Ensure and Boost and Glucerna, and that's
my
just...
My pet peeve.
Garbage.
When I was in the hospital, they gave me so much Ensure that I couldn't see the TV anymore. It was like a, pyramid.
Of Ensure.
A pyramid of Ensure. anyway. Okay,
yeah.
So let's get directly to questions. And once again, I'll remind our listeners that you can email us your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com and make your questions succinct to the point because there's sometimes questions that are very much like a medical consultation that we obviously can't answer on the air. We actually had to widow one out that would seem to be like, you know, what do I do for this complex medical situation? Well, I'm sorry.
And
we
here
can't.
Are my labs. Well,
right.
that's
no.
a consult.
Yes, exactly. Which we takes hours at the Hoffman Center. Okay.
Okay, our first question is from Molly. Dr. Hoffman, on your recent podcast on oral health, you mentioned that your dentist gave you something to put on your teeth. I believe it was to strengthen enamel. You said you could vouch for it, and it did not taste bad. What was the name of that product?
The product's name is MI Paste, or maybe it's pronounced Me Paste, but it's actually capital M, capital I Paste, which is an unfortunate name because it suggests that it might give you a myocardial infarction.
Yeah.
But or a heart attack in common parlance. But MI Paste is, I looked it up, first of all, it's expensive. You buy it at the dentist. I don't even know, I guess it's available on the internet, but they sell it to you at the dentist. But it's like expensive. It's $20 for a little tube.
Oh, wow.
But it comes in pleasant flavors, and what it does is it actually hardens your enamel without fluoride. And the main ingredient is something called calcium phosphate.
Oh.
Which is...
That sounds good.
A.K.A. cement, also known as cement.
Okay.
Okay. So it creates... The reason they gave it to me is because I'm a bruxer, and I apparently at night put a lot of pressure on my teeth, so I was cracking the surface enamel on my molars.
Mm.
And the dentist was kind of concerned about that and said that I should apply the MI paste at night before I go to sleep, just sort of dab it onto my teeth to have a hardening effect.
Mm-hmm.
And
great idea.
Right. So I
used to do that until I graduated graduate school, and then I stopped doing that.
And then your tension left your
body. The tension left my
body,
exactly.
Okay. Well,
anyway, so this would be...
You know, I still have dreams.
Mm-hmm.
For people who've not been through this kind of rigorous training, but the vast majority of listeners probably have, and they have similar recollections, but I still have these kind of weird, nightmarish dreams that I'm in college or I'm in med school and I'm about to graduate. It's like springtime, and for some unexplained reason, I don't have enough credits to graduate.
I've had that dream.
It's a recurrent theme.
It's
a scary
thing. It's horrific.
It's horrific because it's like, oh my God, you know, it's like, here's graduation, and they're going to find out I don't have enough credits. And, you know, it's like I'm going to miss graduation.
Yeah.
Because in college especially, it was a juggling match. You know, you had to, like, make your own schedule. And if you actually could screw up and not have enough credits on graduation day.
That's true. And you were solely responsible for that.
Right.
My dream was always that I still needed a year and a half of either a math course or a physics course.
Yeah.
And how was I going to do that in these final 6 weeks before graduation?
Yes.
And then I'd wake up and, oh, thank goodness, that was just a dream.
Nightmare. Right.
Yeah.
You wake up to
horrifying.
The current dilemmas, which is like the bills are due, you know, like the washing machine broke down,
right, you know, things like that.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
So this MI paste would be a good substitute for a fluoride treatment?
Is it a substitute? Well, you know, look, we're not real keen on lots and lots of fluoride. We get fluoride through drinking water. We get fluoride in many canned and processed foods. We go to the dentist, they apply more fluoride, and then they give us fluoride toothpaste.
Yeah.
And so fluoride has certain toxicities.
Yeah.
There was an article that I posted, which is on the internet now, something like 20 reasons why, you know, you probably, or maybe, it might have been 100 reasons why you shouldn't use fluoride.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of studies that suggest that although there may be some tooth hardening effects, there's some toxicity associated with fluoride to the thyroid, carcinogenicity. Certainly, they've actually reduced the current government-mandated requirements for fluoridation.
That's
the
good
level.
News.
They didn't say stop fluoridating. They still push that. But they said we're putting too much fluoride in the water. It's causing an epidemic of tooth mottling in children. It's like these whitish patches that appear on teeth, maybe due to excess fluoride.
Wow.
So they actually said, and I think kind of a partial victory, that we don't need to use as much fluoride as we once thought. So this is a non-fluoride way to enhance tooth hardness that, maybe a good way to go.
Okay, Molly, thank you for your question. We've got another question from Franklin. I have a small compression fracture in my lumbar with a lot of swelling from osteoporosis. My doctor recommended kyphoplasty, a procedure that cements it in place and reduces pain. Would you recommend letting it heal naturally or going for the surgery with all the attendant risks and imaging and all of that?
Yeah, this is kyphoplasty is basically, they use sort of a glue gun to put cement in your spine to help heal. And they've been going back and forth with studies. The latest study that I see is from 2012 on this that suggests that kyphoplasty provides greater pain relief and fewer subsequent fractures than if you just, you know, let it go its merry way and treat it even with osteoporosis medications.
Wow.
So I would argue that a case could be made for strontium as a bone hardener, and also studies have shown that it sometimes reduces the pain of fractures. But that's an oral thing, and it doesn't take, you could simultaneously take strontium. 680 milligrams at bedtime.
How about
at the same
ostanol?
Time you do. Yeah, ostanol, that's a good one because ostanol is a bone morphogenic protein. It accelerates healing. I would recommend that too. That's a product that's a little tough to source in retail pharmacies, but it's a product that we carry at the Hoffman Center. It's a very kind of a niched product, rather expensive, that is used to treat, I use it for patients with fractures or patients who have severe osteoporosis. There's also some evidence that it may be helpful for osteoarthritis.
Oh, terrific.
So it's Ostinol, O-S-T-I-N-O-L. You can, we have a convenient search box at drhoffman.com, and you can plug it in and see if you can find that product, or you can call the Hoffman Center for information.
Okay. Franklin, we hope that helps you. Our next question is from Mike. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I understand there are two types of C-reactive protein, which escapes me at this moment, and perhaps you can enlighten me about these two types of CRP and how autoimmune disorders contribute possibly to both types, and whether one type of CRP is more serious than the other.
Okay. So we're all talking about inflammation very frequently. Yeah. And so how do you get a report card on your degree of inflammation? Well, one, subjectively, you know, if you're very achy and your joints are stiff, and, you know, that's apparent, obvious inflammation, or if you have a skin disorder, which is skin is very red, or if you have, you know, a colonoscopy, they tell you you have irritation or inflammation in your gastrointestinal. Those are obvious signs. But how can you measure it otherwise? Mm-hmm. And the there's a couple of ways. One is with a sedimentation rate, but that's not a very specific test. That's a test that could be anything could cause an elevation in your sed rate, an infection.
Like a cold.
Or a cold, or just anything that, that causes the blood to, in effect, thicken.
Okay.
The C-reactive protein is, there's a couple of C-reactive proteins. One is the systemic CRP, or the regular CRP, which is less sensitive than the highly sensitive C-reactive protein, which targets the blood vessels.
Mm-hmm.
However, your highly sensitive C-reactive protein could be thrown out of kilter by some degree of inflammation anywhere else in the body.
Or tissue injury.
Or even excess exercise, even a bout of exercise beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
So we have some patients who come in and we measure highly sensitive C-reactive protein as a risk factor for cardiovascular disease. And sometimes they're like, oh, my goodness, it's high. Did you have a cold? Or oh, yeah, I was just coming off a bad cold. I was coughing that day, so apparently. Some lung inflammation might cause that C-reactive protein to go up.
Okay.
It is thought to be a reflection of cytokine activity.
Mm-hmm.
Cytokines are the pro-inflammatory humors in the blood. But you could also get a handle sometimes on subtypes of inflammation by looking at interleukin 6, IL-6, is raised in some people with viral ailments. It is thought sometimes to be a marker for chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia.
Could CRP also be high from allergy season?
I guess that's possible. I guess that's possible. You know.
Okay.
But, you know, infections. So anyway, so he wants to know about autoimmune disease. Definitely, it's a marker for things like lupus, arthritis, particularly rheumatoid arthritis.
We've seen it in Crohn's,
absolutely.
High CRP.
Say, for example, you have you have one of these ailments. You have rheumatoid arthritis, you have Crohn's disease, you have an itis, an inflammatory lupus or something like that. And you come to the Hoffman Center and we treat you. So the question for patients is, how do I know I'm better? Number one, you're subjectively better. You say, I feel better. And patients who have high C-reactive protein, not only do they have aches and pains, but they also have a sort of a brain fog. Just like when you have a flu-like illness, you feel sort of logy and depressed and unfocused.
Hmm.
So subjective, number one. Number two, there's a metric you can use. You can look at rheumatoid factor, or you could use sed rate, and you could use C-reactive protein to monitor rheumatoid arthritis and Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. And so if those are normal, it suggests there's less systemic inflammation. And then in intestinal problems, we can look up there and say, is it red? Is it inflamed? Is there ulceration? Or we could do a stool test that gives us markers of inflammation in the stool.
Okay.
White blood cells or other markers like calprotectin, which is elevated sometimes mm-hmm. when you have an inflammatory disorder. Eosinophil protein X is elevated in the stool samples of people with active colitis.
Mm-hmm.
So that way we give you a report card on your inflammation. This is a very important test. I think everybody should have a highly sensitive C-reactive protein to see how they're doing in terms of inflammation that could affect cardiovascular disease. By the way, periodontal disease?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that could cause it.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Mike wants to know, how would we lower it? Thinking things like fish oil,
There's actually, I'm not going to enumerate the ways, because there's an article that I wrote. If you Google C-reactive protein or CRP, I wrote an article, 15 or 17 ways to lower your C-reactive protein. But let's talk about some of them. You know, fish oil. Yeah.
Fish oil, curcumin.
Multivitamins even have been, magnesium in some studies.
Yes.
Exercise, losing weight.
An anti-inflammatory diet.
Yes.
Getting
and what does that consist
food.
Of? Yeah.
An anti-inflammatory diet. Salad, salmon, good organic produce, you know,
a lot of
grass-fed
dietary
meat,
polyphenols and spices.
Yes. Berries, good fruit, low glycemic, all of that.
Right. So, I mean, how do you get inflammation in America? You eat an inflammatory diet. You eat,
the standard American diet.
Potato chips made with poor quality oils. You eat a lot of fast food.
Donut, Danish for breakfast.
You know, there's even some suggestion that the gut, you know, has an impact on this, and that probiotics or the right kind of diet create the right kind of flora that is anti-inflammatory.
Yeah. Thank you for your question, Mike. Okay. Oh, we've got another question from a different Michael. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, you recently mentioned that fat was the only substance that can slow the absorption of sugar or carbs. However, I thought that if one eats a grain carbohydrate food that's high in fiber, that the fiber would also slow the absorption of the carbs into the bloodstream. Is that correct? Well, fats do indeed slow down the absorption of the carbohydrates in our food, in our meal. Fiber can also do that somewhat, but not as well as fat.
Right.
So you're better off having, you know, some avocado with your meal, for instance, than having some kind of a grain carbohydrate and relying on the fiber. Or even the fiber in fruit is actually not enough fiber to temper the absorption of the fructose in the fruit. So it's important to make this distinction. The science has pretty much told us that fiber is not as good as blunting blood sugar responses as fats are.
And I have a thought on that, because the mechanism by which fiber slows the absorption of the carbohydrates that are within it is mechanical. In other words, it acts sort of like a time release capsule in a way, because it time releases the carbs. So if you have like a tablespoon of pure sugar, boom, there's nothing that's going to slow its absorption.
Yeah.
But if that same amount of carbohydrate is in, say, a serving of beans, the fiber in the beans will lock up some of those carbohydrates,
that's
and they'll
right.
be slower to slowly digested and released over time.
Yeah.
The effect of fat is different. Fat has actually, it's a hormonally mediated slowing. Why?
CCK.
Because CCK, cholecystokinin, and other things that are triggered by fat slow intestinal transit. They keep the fat in your stomach longer before it gets the go-ahead signal. You know, the train tracks are okay down the line. We can move this bolus of food further down to the intestine for absorption.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, fat is a more effective slower of digestion. When you mix fat with your carbohydrates, that will sort of lock up the carbohydrates. Again, a reason why athletes should not be having like a fatty meal before exertion, because it's just going to stain your stomach. The carbohydrates will not be made available.
You might even get nauseated and throw up.
Because
you
just have a big bolus of fat in your stomach.
Yeah.
So don't have spare ribs before, you know, like
before
like a big serving of spare ribs before a marathon. You think, oh, I'm going to get a lot of strength and energy from that. Like, uh-huh. No, after the marathon.
After the marathon, go eat your spare ribs.
Right.
You'll need the protein to rebuild. Michael has a second part to his question. How does protein raise blood sugar, as we've noted? Does the source of protein make a difference? There is a such thing. You know, when we think of a low-carb diet, many people are thinking of it being high protein.
Yep.
It's really more high fat. The protein is actually more moderate. It's still anywhere between 20 and 35%.
You're making a very important point here, yeah. is that protein, pure protein, steak, has a glycemic index.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Which is, where's the carbs coming from?
Right, right, right.
So to his question, where are the carbs coming from physiologically?
That excess protein will go into blood sugar via a process called gluconeogenesis.
You nailed it, yes.
That's it. So this excess protein that we're all eating, because we're on a low-carb, high-protein diet, is still turning into blood sugar.
Right.
And this may explain why a lot of people will plateau or have trouble curbing their cravings or losing weight. It's because of this reason. The protein portion is actually supposed to be the same as it was before. We're actually increasing the fat a little more to blunt that whole process as well. So
right. I think in one of the disservices that's been done to this concept of low-carb diet is that it translates into just high protein.
You're not going to eat a 20-ounce steak.
And some people have modified the Atkins. They've been very worried about the Atkins diet. They said, oh, well, there's too much fat in that. Let's make it just a high-protein, low-fat, low-carb diet. Mm-mm. Just eat protein and green leafy vegetables.
No.
Not good.
It's not meat and lettuce. No.
Right.
No, that's not healthy.
And Atkins recognized that. Actually, he recognized and it was quite a taboo then. He recognized the value of fat, healthy fat, but you know, not to the exclusion of saturated fat, which he recognized could be useful.
Also helpful. Yeah, yeah. So when we're on a lower fat, a low carb, higher fat, high protein diet, what we're doing is we're eliminating the grain or the starch. That meat the protein portion does not actually get bigger. What you want to do is supplement that with some more vegetables. You could still have 8 ounces of protein, but you don't require 12 or 15. Some people only require 4 or 6. That's pretty much what it takes for me anyway. So you have to consider all that. Excess protein will turn into blood sugar, as well as excess calories.
Right.
You know, a 20-ounce steak is going to be 1,500 calories.
And the other thing is, you know, some people actually point out to the quality of the amino acid balance in muscle meat as not even being that optimal. They suggest that
organ meats
actually may have a better sampling of the requisite amino acids and nutrients that you need. But these days, we eschew organ meat in America.
Yeah.
We tend to think of it as, you know, junk. And in many other countries, they prize kidneys and tripe, you know, the intestines, you know, heart, you know, all these things that we think are yucky.
Exactly.
Liver.
Well, here's the thing, and I tell a lot of our patients this. If you were sentenced to Devil's Island and you were only allowed to choose one food, what would that be? Well, according to my biochemistry textbook, it would be liver, for instance.
Wow, okay.
Liver, because it's got the most nutrition of all the other
animal sources of folate, for
That's
example.
That's right, folate.
Because folate
mostly
comes from foliage.
Mm-hmm.
But
folate, vitamin A, tons of vitamin A, iron, carnitine, CoQ10. You don't get that from broccoli. So, you know, choosing a vegetarian way if you're sentenced to Devil's Island is probably not a great idea. But these organ meats need to come back. That was a very, very traditional diet, and now it's starting to come back a little bit, although a lot of people are still ick about it.
Very good. All right. This is a logical point at which to pause because we divide these podcasts into two parts. Those of you who listen are familiar with that process. Please fast forward to part two and give us a preview, Layla, of today's part two of the Q&A with Layla.
Okay. Are there any benefits to apple cider vinegar?
Are there any benefits to apple cider vinegar? Coming up on Intelligent Medicine, I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin. We'll be right back.